Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
A new report has called for clarity on the relationship between government and NPHET and how key pandemic decisions were made over the last 18 months or so. And the study by legal experts from Trinity College has criticised a lack of transparency on how these decisions were reached and whether certain public health measures were actually legally enforceable. And to talk more to it is the, or more about it is the author of this particular report, Alan Eustace, who's a PhD candidate in Trinity College. Good afternoon to you, Alan.
I know, thanks very much for having me on.
Okay, what was the purpose of the report, or what was the reasoning behind it?
Sure, so since the pandemic started, Trinity have had a law and human rights observatory set up to examine the government's legal response to the public health situation.
Yeah.
And this report is a culmination of our work. We've issued other reports and we've kept publications going throughout, but this report looks at the legal responses to public health management, and we make a series of recommendations that we hope the government will take on board for the remainder of this pandemic and indeed for any future crises that may arise. So we looked at the sort of decision-making processes in between government and NPHET. We looked at the kind of restrictions that have been imposed throughout the pandemic. And then we also looked at the kind of support that were made available by the state to individuals to help them to navigate the public health situation.
Okay, you found, obviously we have to establish then the position of NPHET, and the position of NPHET as a public health emergency team would be to report to government what how they believe certain things would affect public health. Now, of course, according to the WHO, public health should also be considered to be social health and mental health, and that's the government's job. So the government should take information from NPHET through full transparency and then make a decision on be it lockdowns or restrictions or whatever it happens to be and have an understanding of how it affects our lives in other ways apart from physical health. But you believe they weren't doing that.
So as a matter of statute, the law requires that the Minister for Health consult with the Chief Medical Officer in making certain kinds of decisions under the relevant health legislation. Everything beyond that throughout this pandemic has had very little statutory basis. So we don't have any legal rules that set up what NPHET is and what it does, who is supposed to sit as a member of NPHET, and what is the procedure for taking on board their advice and weighing it up against, as you say, other considerations that the government needs to take account
like social
of.
And mental health rather than just physical health, yes. And to be fair to NPHET, that's not their job. You know, their job is physical health.
Well, yes, and this is something that we flag in the report. So we say that, look, if NPHET has a very narrow range of specialisms among the members.
The virology aspect of it and the epidemiology aspect of it, yeah.
Exactly. And there's been very little formal channel by which other kinds of expertise can reach government decision making. So in the report, we recommend that if we are going to rely on these sort of public health teams, then we need to have a broader range of expertise brought in. So you need
I think I suggested this last year, I think, when we were talking about it. Would it be a fair suggestion that NPHET, who are a team of a particular people, we're all very familiar with their names now at this stage, that on a regular basis that they should be changed to avoid, I suppose, an echo chamber of some description? Is that a recommendation, that maybe that the team should be changed on a regular basis, different experts be brought in with different qualifications and different specialities? Because you point out that in the report that essentially the emergency team, NPHET, had become the de facto decision maker.
We don't have a specific recommendation on turnover of personnel within the public health team. What we have is we noted that at some stages in the pandemic, there were subcommittees established within the public health advisory team, which have specific expertise in particular areas. Now, those subcommittees were subsequently disbanded, and we don't really know why that was and where.
When were they disbanded? Because I remember it was announced by Stephen Donnelly that there would be a subcommittee, like a buffer, so to speak, between NPHET and the government. And are you saying now that subcommittee is now gone?
No, so there's two issues there. So one, there were subcommittees within NPHET.
Within NPHET, okay.
were disbanded around, I think it's August of last year, sometime last summer. I don't have the exact date, but it was last summer. Then you also mentioned the idea of the civil service team to act as a buffer between NPHET and the government. And so the idea was that at that stage, the public health advice could be tallied with other kinds of expert advice that was feeding through and then could be presented to Cabinet. Now, that team is apparently still in operation, right? So this was established in September last year. There's been no indication that that practice has stopped, but we also have no information on how that process operates.
So you're saying there's a lack of transparency in this whole system?
There is a significant lack of transparency. That is one of the key criticisms that we have throughout this report, not just in how NPHET operates, but other aspects of the pandemic response.
Okay, you also mentioned as well, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to rush you, but you also mentioned as well that some of the public health measures that were brought in weren't, there was a question mark over whether they were legally enforceable. Now, in particular, what aspects of these measures do you believe may have question marks over the legalities of the enforceability?
So this is something that the Observatory has been flagging throughout the pandemic. We noted that there have been four kinds of response by the state during the pandemic. So there's advice, there's what Taoiseach has referred to as a civil offence. There's been a criminal offence, but with a reasonable excuse defence to that. And then there are offences where you have no defence of a reasonable excuse. The problem that we've had is that at various different stages in the pandemic, the state has presented in kind of public discussions or questions from the media that something is a criminal offence when it isn't, when it's only advice or where there's no sanction attached.
Well, it's a guideline, essentially, rather than a legal requirement.
So one of those we have was with religious services for all of last year and some portion of the lockdown after January.
Okay.
Where the advice was that there should be no religious services. It was being presented that there was a criminal prohibition, but as far as we could tell, it was very tenuous as to whether there actually was
there is actually a High Court challenge on that at the moment, isn't there, by Declan Ganley? I know Declan Ganley was taking a High Court challenge in relation to that.
Yeah. So when that case initially came up for hearing, it was the state suggested that it would be moot, that there was no legal issue to challenge because religious services were reopening. We don't know what the status of that case is at the moment. This report was done up to April.
So would that apply, for example, to the big debate, of course, this week has been about confirmations and communions. So, and basically because they have a label of confirmations and communions, i.e. you can have a wedding but you can't have a confirmation or communion, because that is government advice and a government guideline. And according to the guidelines of Bord Fáilte as well, in relation to having private events within hotels. So you're saying there's a stark difference between a guideline and advice and an actual law, and there's a confusion to the general public in the way these are being presented by government.
Absolutely. It's not our position to criticise any particular public health measures, right? We're not public health doctors. What we're trying to get across is the idea that there are serious rule of law concerns that arise where the government presents something as being criminally prohibited when in fact it is simply advice that you don't carry out a particular thing. And I think the example you give that's going on at the moment around those religious sacraments and the communions and confirmations, that's another example of something that we've picked up on happening several times during the pandemic, of a confusion between whether things are actually prohibited or not.
Well, we, of course, Stephen Donnelly and Micheál Martin over the weekend condemned the Bishop of Elphin when he said he was going to fire away and do them anyway. And they said he was putting lives at risk, etc., etc. But at no point did I think they suggested the Garda Síochána would arrest them. So, in other words, there is a confusion as to whether those things... In other words, we're telling people that you shouldn't do something, but we're actually really saying to them, listen, if you do it, we're not going to like you very much, but it doesn't mean you're going to go to jail for it.
Yeah, that's right. And this is, as I say, this isn't the first time that's happened during the pandemic.
Okay.
It could be forgiven at certain times as where the law was actually confusing, but the longer it goes on, the less willing, I mean, we have been anyway in the report to recognise could be genuine confusion.
Do you think that was intentional, Alan, to confuse people between guidelines and legislation?
I mean, obviously we can't read minds. Some of my colleagues have noted elsewhere that it's becoming increasingly hard to believe that it's not intentional, that, or at least that there aren't decision makers who are aware of
the confusion,
that exists and have not taken steps to correct any confusion that they're aware is out there.
Finally, in your report as well, you also talk about power. And you talk about NPHET. Do you believe, according to your report, that NPHET had too much power over the last 18 months?
We recognise something that we've called an accountability gap, right? There's a kind of a trap here between either the government is delegating a significant amount of decision-making power to a body with no statutory foundation where we don't really understand how it's supposed to work as a matter of law, or the government is continuing to make decisions, which it's supposed to do as the elected representatives, but using the advice of the public health team as a cover for the decisions that the government is making, and thereby skirting their own responsibility to take account, to be accountable for those decisions.
And for that reason, they're allowing then NPHET to take the power, is what you're saying.
Yeah, either of those is a bad thing, right? Because we think that we need to have, obviously in any kind of public emergency, there are going to be compromises made on the ordinary processes by which government decisions are made, right, when there's an emergency situation. But democratic oversight remains very important. Accountability and transparency remains important, and the rule of law remains important.
And we also have to point out that public health is quite important as well, and that obviously a lot of people believe NPHET are doing a wonderful job, but there are others, of course, that criticise some of the decisions that have been made for the very reason that you're talking about in your report, which is the lack of transparency. I know the pubs and restaurants, for example, a while ago were calling for data. If you're going to keep us closed, can you show us why? Give us reasons why, and give us some sort of transparency as to why you're making these decisions. And I think that's what you're report focuses very much on as well. But look, you believe there's a lack of accountability. In the UK, they've announced, by the way, in 2 years' time, there'll be a full inquiry as to how Sage, which is their version of NPHET, of course, dealt with this situation. And again, they're having the same problems in the UK too that you talk about in your report. Do you believe there should be a public inquiry when this is all over as to how decisions are made? And a public inquiry would be important for transparency and obviously not to make the same mistakes in the future if something similar happened again.
Yeah, so this isn't a conclusion that we reached in this report itself, but speaking for myself, I think there should be a public inquiry, and I think some of the concerns that we've raised in this report should be examined, and I think you're right to point out that there may very well be future crises and we may need to learn lessons from this one, and that's why in this report we've set out 16 recommendations for public health governance generally, not just in the context of this particular emergency.
It's a very good report. I've read a lot of it. It's a very interesting report to read. Just finally, what has been the reaction of NPHET and government, or have you had any reaction from NPHET and government to your report?
I haven't gotten any communication directly. I don't know whether any of my colleagues have.
Okay, because it's been all over the media today, so I'm sure somebody's going to have to react at some point to it. But listen, thank you very much indeed. Alan Eustace, PhD candidate in Trinity College and the author of this particular report. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the air today, and I appreciate it.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic Hits.